Good morning, everybody. Sarah Mitchell, Head of Employment and Career Pathways, Blind Low Vision here. Welcome to the May 2026 Work Ready webinar. Can't believe we're in May. Today we are delighted to have a guest speaker, so one of our clients, Anthony Liu, who has been a client for most of his life, and he will talk about his story around his vision and then his journey into employment or self-employment and his business, and an exciting new addition to the family. I'm not going to give too much away, but our Anthony, welcome very much, welcome, and thank you very much for coming along. We're all really looking forward to hearing your story, and as we go along, we're going to record this as per usual. If you've got any questions, Anthony, are you happy for people just to interject?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
great.
Probably makes it a bit less boring.
I'm sure it's not going to be boring. And yeah, so just interject. And if you could please, when you have a question, if you could just say who it is that is speaking, would be great.
Riley, can you just turn that off? It's.
And if anyone has got, if anyone has got speech over, voice over on, if they could just turn that off as well. Thank you. Okay, Anthony, well, look, welcome. And the floor is yours.
Oh, thanks, Sarah, and kia ora, everyone. I'd work through a few things today just in terms of a little bit about my story. I try not to dwell on that too much, but maybe then just sort of get into some, some tips and things that I've learned along the way. Normally when I'm preparing for one of these things, I'm fumbling my way through a PowerPoint presentation. I'm having to memorize the sequence and hoping like how that I don't screw it up. But when Sarah said that, we didn't need to do slides, I was thinking that's a score. That's so awesome. This is my kind of crowd. So I was really relieved with that. In terms of, I guess, me, I live in Wellington with my three kids. The oldest, my daughter, is almost 17. She just got a restricted driver's license, which is pretty cool. And I've got a son who's 14, and my youngest daughter is 10. We also just have a new addition to the family, a guide dog, Vinny, which I've had for a month. And that's been, pretty cool. It's quite different. The kids love it. Quite different having a dog around the house because we've never had that before. Really nice. And I'm desperately trying not to break him and screw up all the great training that he's had. So it's been, quite a change over the last month or so. A little bit about me. I grew up in Wellington. I traveled. But I lived overseas just through working and that sort of thing. But I grew up here in Wellington with my mum and dad and two brothers. For those that can't see me, seeing AI says that I'm a 43-year-old man with dark hair, looking happy. So if that helps. If I suck my cheeks and tighten my forehead, I can get it down to 39, but then it says I'm looking surprised. So, but it's all a little bit too flattering and, but yeah, if just in case that helps. Growing up, it was different times back then, you were left to it. It was very different to how we bring up, our kids these days. It was quite tough times. We didn't have a lot. My dad was pretty strict. And it was all just, about family and doing your own thing a lot, I guess. Even from an early age, I suppose, my dad pimped us out to mow the neighbor's lawns and we earned money that way. You had to be 11 to have a paper round, which, that's what kids used to do in those days. I would deliver papers or milk. But I managed to score a job when I was nine. So that was pretty good. Even at that early stage, I loved earning money for lollies, and there was a toy shop in our suburb that had this really cool gun rack. So I used to love going down there, and like I said, it was a little bit different times back then. I've always had, issues with my eyes. So right from birth, I never had any night vision. And so I'd always be grabbing my older brother's jacket or whatever when we're out at night, guiding. But you made the best of it. I remember going to the first time I knew what I had. So I had retinitis pigmentosa. I went to the eye specialist, and I don't recall why, but I went by myself, and I was 13 years old. And the eye specialist said that I had this thing called retinitis pigmentosa and I would eventually likely go blind. And I remember walking home after that thinking, wow, that was pretty crap. And so I probably did my best after that to bury it as deep down as I could. But that was probably the first time that I sort of had a tag put on it. Everything was pretty normal. I didn't see that well, but I still played sports, I still played rugby, I still ran, I still did all the normal things. I did all the normal things at school, which was all great. When I was leaving school, I'd done really well in accounting and economics. Not unweirdly, but so I thought I was going to be an accountant. And so then when I went to university and I did the first course and first accounting paper, and I hated it. So I stopped thinking that I was going to be an accountant after that, and just did some other things. I didn't really like university that much. I ended up just with a couple of jobs. One working in a shoe factory and the other one was cleaning a pub. So I got my ass out of bed at 4:30 every morning and to clean this pub down on Courtney Place. And I was the worst cleaner ever because it was so dark. I couldn't see what I was cleaning. So I didn't last that long there, but I had lots of jobs through uni. I was probably one of my only friends that finished uni without a loan and actually with some money in the bank. But again, that was, that's kind of par for the course with me. I'd rather just get on with it. I just felt that uni was, a little bit too theoretical and not practical enough. So when I finished university, I got my first job at Transrail, which these days it's called KiwiRail. I did some admin jobs there. I had a few promotions and I ended up with 70 staff. Was in a treasury, managing cash flow and an accounts role, even though I didn't want to be an accountant. It was kind of cool back then. It was, well, not so great, but it was owned by an American company, and as part of what I was doing, I got to travel around the world because we were buying up railway companies, and I was part of the due diligence process there. And it was really interesting for a younger person, but also just I thought that was probably my first foray into IT and just understanding and seeing how that would work. And my job there was to integrate and bring these companies into the fold and make them all connect and work the way that we all worked. As I said, that's my first taste of IT. I had big teams, and I'd always played sport. Like I said, I'd always been involved in sport. And one of the lessons that I learnt in that job was building a team, especially a larger team, it doesn't matter if it's a sports team or in a business or wherever it is, it's the same concepts apply. So having a big team like that taught me how to build a team, and that was always going to be really important moving forward. I guess some of the other lessons I learned there are how to manage conflict. We had a team of 25 people that were credit controllers, and I don't know if you guys know, but a credit controller collects accounts and collects money, you know, from your customers and manages overdues and all makes threats, and they're generally quite bossy people and quite a little bit aggressive. Just by nature, that's the nature of the job because that's what they do. And out of that team of 25, 24 of them were women. So, and again, not a lot of balance, and I don't want to get too on PC or anything, but that was, here was me, was 20, I think I was 26 at the time, and I was in the middle of this, I was this young kid in the middle of this stuff trying to figure out what the hell and being a referee. So at the same time, it definitely helped me to learn how to manage conflict and have people, you know, getting on with each other. The other thing it taught me was about leadership and my leadership style, I guess, as well. And my style was definitely just to work hard and lead by example and work alongside people and just work on that basis that if you look after people and do well by them, then if they're the right fit for your team, then they'll give back in terms of their commitment and performance. And those lessons were, you know, definitely helpful for everything that I did after that. When I left there, I started my own business. I got that taste for IT and I liked it. So I started a business called IQ, and it was a tech company. So we were software developers, and it was just me and another guy. You ended up doing everything. We started that, didn't really know what we were going to do, but managed to pick up some customers and managed to do anything and everything, even if we were no good at it. And in the early days, it's just really about survival and just trying to, you know, get enough money coming in to make it worthwhile. It was definitely different to working in a corporate. I'd gone from having big teams. I had a PA. You had people that did stuff, but in a small business, it was, you know, then on me, you know, it was like ordering the stationery, going to pick up the milk, cleaning the fridge out, and you know, vacuuming the office and cleaning the toilets in the end. So you end up doing everything because there's no one else to do that sort of thing. It's just you. So certainly took a bit of getting used to, and you know, good and bad, I guess. But when you have a software development company, your goal is, well, most people's goal is to try and build an application that, you know, you sell multiple times. But all we were managing to do was you know, build to order. So we would build an application based on what somebody wanted for their business. You'd obviously build them something, you'd never be able to, you know, recuperate all the money because there was always, you know, such a long tail on that sort of thing. But, you know, I couldn't figure out how to crack into that, you know, building an application that someone would, you know, lots of people would buy. We carried on like that for about 5 years or 6 years, I guess. And it wasn't until a friend of mine who worked at a print company, he asked me to come in and help him with some, you know, a few automation things and some calculations based on print jobs coming in. And it was after that, well, it wasn't until that we really sort of started to get an idea that, hey, I had some ideas in this space, and that's really where we sort of got involved in the print industry. And when I say print industry, it's not, don't think business cards and, you know, letterheads and books, because, you know, that side of the industry has struggled for such a long time. So when the growth in print is really in that labeling space, so, you know, every bottle has a label on it, be it a beer bottle or wine. And if you go to the supermarket, there's all the packaging, all of that is printed. You know, just look, if you look around, all the signage, both indoor and outdoor, all the point of sale, all the promotional stuff like that. It's enormous, and that's where the growth is in that industry. That was our starting point, I guess. We started to do really well. To emphasize the importance of marketing, I'd done the marketing sheets and all the documentation about what we did before we built it. So I knew what it needed to do, but I just needed to tell people about that and try and get that out there. And we actually sold a lot of what we were doing before we had even built it. And again, that's that classic small business situation is, you know, why let that get in the way? Obviously some awkward moments, that it worked out in the end. Like any good Kiwi company, we then branched out into Australia. So we set up over there because that was the easiest place to go. We built the business there, started bringing in more people and more staff and selling the same thing to different people. Just, you know, it was a hard road, but it worked out really well. And the business, we expanded it into the US, and, you know, we thought Australia was hard, but man, apologies to any Americans on the call, but geez, man, Americans are tough. They're a different way of doing business, different culture. We might look similar, we might talk English, but, you know, that's probably where it stops. And just having so many almost different countries within, you know, one border was just trying to understand how to do business there. And finally, we moved off to the UK, and that was almost like coming home because the ponds were just, it was refreshing. It was just like what we do here. The terminology is all the same. The jargon's the same. Everyone's just a bit nicer and easier to deal with, which was really cool. So, by that point, things were ramping up and, you know, things were getting a lot harder. We were doing really well. We had a great team, and all those lessons that I learned were, you know, coming in. You know, I was the leader. I was, backing everyone, you know, putting in all the support structures and, you know, we were doing great. But at the same time, my eyes were getting worse. It was that classic sort of starting to deteriorate, you know, as I went through my 30s, I guess. So that was getting harder, and I kind of knew that I always had it in the back of my mind that it was almost like a burning platform. Where I knew I had a period of time where I needed to grow this thing and then try and sell it, because I wanted to sell. So if I couldn't work or didn't want to work, I could set my family up and support them, and we would be set. So that was, you know, really important to have a goal, a very different goal to most people, but that was really important to me. So as we got through COVID, everything got harder. You know, it's harder to sell. People were harder to deal with, both customers and staff. And so when I had the opportunity to sell, it was to an American private equity company, and getting through that, so going through the sales process, it's like a cross between a really intense police interrogation combined maybe with an invasive doctor's examination. So you definitely don't want to go through that too many times. So I found it really hard, but what it meant is in the end, we'd sold the business, and while I stayed on for a while there to see things through, it was done, and I kind of ticked that box, which was, you know, such a proud thing to achieve, and I was, you know, super happy with that. After the business, I needed a rest. I needed a break for my eyes. You know, all those years of sitting, you know, half a meter from a screen, had taken its toll. So just having a break and reconnecting with family and just being more present was such a cool thing. And for all those years, every summer I'd looked out that window, you know, looked at the harbour and wished that I was out there rather than being stuck inside. And so we'd we'd done a we were doing a house renovation at the time, and I just kept turning up each day, and our builders and labourer had done his back, and so I just ended up mixing concrete and digging post holes and ended up helping with the building, and it was such a good change, and so cool to actually do something with your hands rather than just dealing, you know, just with, you know, stuff and angry people. So that was great to have that gap and do something different. Then in terms of I'd always done some natural healing or energy healing, and was a little bit different. But I'd always done that, and I actually then combined that with because it always led into some, you know, more stuff in terms of counselling, and so I'd done a bit of training because it always sort of led there anyway. And so today I'm a counsellor, and I deal with anything from trauma counselling right through to business coaching. So it's very, very different to what I used to do, but it's such a rewarding and such a great thing to just to be able to help people and deal in a different way than running a business. So feel, you know, quite privileged that, you know, I've been able to do so many different things, but sort of ending up in a pretty good space as well. So I guess that's me. That's kind of where I'm at, and that's my story, I suppose. I'll press on and just talk a little bit about, you know, some of the lessons that I've learned, and maybe a little bit more practical stuff in terms of, what I've done and what I've learned over the years. So one of the main reasons for talking to you guys today is more about setting up a business or being self-employed as an alternative to, you know, working for somebody else. I would say it's not for everybody. So I know, you know, you think being your own boss is really cool, but in the end, when you run your own business, your customers end up as your boss. And so then it becomes harder as you get more customers. You have lots of different bosses all wanting different things at the same time. So it definitely makes it a little bit harder. It's a harder route to take because you're it. No one's there doing stuff for you. You're it. No one's paying a salary. But the flip side is that you do have more control, and there's more choices that you can make. And especially, you know, for someone that has low vision, not having to conform with, you know, someone else's way of doing things is often a good road to go down. But I don't also want to sugarcoat it to say that it's easy. But, you know, there's definitely pros and cons. And I would say the main thing you need is passion. My test of that is on a Sunday night, if you're real excited about going to work on Monday morning, then you're probably in the right space. In terms of just a little bit about getting started and just maybe some practical tips, I suppose, starting a business is pretty easy, and it's not as intimidating as what it might seem. And I'm definitely an advocate for sort of easing into it. So don't go too full on until you've actually figured out if it's going to work. So the easiest way to set up is, you know, I'm sorry if this is telling you how to suck eggs, but it's as a sole trader, it's just as yourself. So you can set up your business, you can trade as whatever name you like, but essentially it's you. That's quite different from having a company. A limited liability company is quite different. You have to register with the company's office, but again, it's not that hard. That gives you, it definitely, you know, limits your risk, but it also, it may also help with credibility in terms of, you know, being a fully fledged company. So, but plenty of people out there are sole traders or just, you know, self-employed. That it's I feel like that's the best way to start because it's the least amount of work and you still set up as a business and you can still do everything that you need to do. There's all those little things around, you know, setting up as a business. So GST, firstly, you don't need to worry about GST until you're earning over $60,000 a year. So, from a credibility perspective, if you're selling to a business, then, you know, sometimes it is better, you know, to register for GST. Same thing for taxes. If you're a sole trader, then your tax return is just your normal tax return. You probably need to get some help from an accountant. There's really good small business accountants around that don't cost the earth. I can recommend some if you need help with that. In terms of the website or socials, really, it comes down to maybe both of them, or maybe one. It really comes down to your target audience, so I would say. So if you're selling to Gen X or baby boomers, then definitely you need a website. If it's later than that, you may be able to get away with your socials depending on, you know, what your preference is. But really think about it from a target market perspective. I think that's probably the main thing. You definitely need to be on LinkedIn. So that's the primary platform, you know, for building your network and getting opportunities. From an accounting perspective, I would just say don't worry about it. I don't sort of want to be too blasé about that, but your number one thing is to learn how to cut an invoice and send it out. Because if you can't invoice somebody, then you're not going to get paid. But there's all the accounting systems like Xero and those sorts of things, but just, yeah, don't worry about that at the start. And, you know, get something to keep the score on before you worry about, you know, those sorts of things. But there's lots of parts of a business, but I'm definitely an advocate to, you know, you need to try it out. You need to figure out if it's going to work. And then, you know, once you start being able to sell your product or your service, then you can start worrying about some of those other things. But I just definitely advocate for, you know, for going slowly. If you have a job right now, and you want, are you thinking of going into business, then do it on the side, do it part-time. Test the water, see if it's going to work, and then you can slowly move over and do more of that if it's successful. If you don't have a job, then, you know, pull your boots, but you want to sort of assess the risk and how much money you're going to put into it before you get something out of it. So I definitely am an advocate for, gently, you know, and slowly on that front. In terms of some insights in terms of running a business and what I've learned, I guess, the key thing that I learned, you know, pretty early on is that you have to think like a customer. You have to understand what they need, and effectively you need to fill a gap. So you need to find a product or a service that people need, or people want, and you also need to, they need to value it enough to pay you money for it. So if you don't have that, then actually you're it's just a hobby, or you're running a charity even. But if there's no demand for what you're offering, well then, you know, you're actually just wasting your time. So I feel like that's the single biggest thing, is that you need to find something that people, you know, want, you know, need. And I think if you do that, you'll do well. I would say get that, define what you do, and have it really succinct. And, you know, they talk about that elevator pitch, that 20 or 30 second spiel about what you do, but do that because it helps you be really confident and upfront about this is what I do. So you're not stumbling your way through that. You're real clear on what you do. Also, from a marketing perspective, marketing is really important. I didn't know that, you know, in the early days, but wasn't until I, you know, it was almost fake it till you make it, putting the marketing out there, because you can have the best product or service, and if no one knows about it, you're just wasting your time. But also, it's the importance of putting, you know, wrapping everything up in a real pretty wrapper and nicely presented. You know, that goes such a long way, especially these days when, you know, people are so visual. And, you know, that for us, it makes it a little bit harder, but, you know, that's, we definitely don't underestimate that, because that's, you know, that's what people are buying often. So just make sure you do that well. I would also say that you need to behave like a big company. And even if you're not. So you're talking about, we did this and we have this, and the reason why I'm saying that is, you know, people don't buy from individuals running out of their bedroom. They buy from people that they, you know, they respect or see as solid. So again, it's just creating that, you know, creating that perception that you know, that people will then buy into. Also, I've talked a little bit about, you know, working hard. So you're at, like I said before, you're at, in a small business. It's you. It's all on you. So be, expect to work hard. And if you work hard, you'll do well. And most people that don't work hard, they don't make it in business. So don't sort of go in with any sort of expectations that this is going to be easy. You need to also realize that people, as a small business, you're the main salesperson. People are buying from you. People will buy from you if they like you or if they trust you. So you need to communicate well. Don't underestimate that. You need to be a little bit out there and be confident and be a little bit different and smile and talk to people, even if you hate that. But because you need to sort of understand that, you know, as the main salesperson, you know, that's you're it. And if people don't like you, or if they think you're a bit odd, or if you don't communicate well, they're not going to buy from you. So you're going to need to sort of get past any of those hang-ups. And even if that's not you, well, again, like I said, you need to, you know, fake it if you have to. The last couple of things really important is especially in business and especially in that sales space, you need to look people in the eye. So many people that I come across, they won't look you in the eye and they have the worst handshakes. You know, sometimes they're wet or soft and again in business you need to get that right. So for me, I can't see where people's eyes are at, but I'm judging that based on where, you know, what I can hear from their voice. So I'm just adjusting my, you know, my eye contact a little bit above, you know, where I can hear them talking. And I feel like that's really important, is to, you know, get that eye contact. And because again, it comes down to that trust and likability factor. And like I just quickly mentioned before, you know, practice a strong hand, you know, a firm handshake. That, you know, that's confident. So those two things, really, when you're meeting people for the first time, that's your first impression, and that's super important, to look them in the eye and give them a good handshake. And I just kind of make sure, because handshakes are a little bit awkward when you're missing and you're not sure where their hand is. So get your hand out there first, because then people are taking that. It just makes it a little bit easier. Then you're not missing quite as much in that awkward handshake space.
Apologies. Thank you for sharing. I put something in the chat, but I should know better. Ask directly. I'm a Gen Xer who's been around the world. You know, I'm from Canada and settled here in New Zealand for many years now. But I have low vision, and I'm realizing just in the past few years, I'm struggling with the idea of, do we lean into our condition and let people know up front what we have as a bit of a way of breaking the ice, which I try to do, or is it such a difficult you know, market out there, whether you're a consultant or a sole trader or you're looking for a job, which I've done all of these, you know, it's better to try and sort of hide what you have until you get that foot in the door, which is what I've been doing. I just need larger screens in the workplace, for example, you know, but until a few years back, I could generally fool them with eye contact. Now I say, hey, I have a lazy eye or something like that, because eye contact is a bit of a struggle for me sometimes. I also wear hearing aids, which are more of a cue to people that, hey, there's something going on here, but I usually make a joke about it, that it's not a problem, you know. I guess, yeah, how do you feel about, you know, leaning into, let's call it a disability, versus trying to hide it, which is what at least my generation grew up with, you know?
Yeah, I was definitely the same. My goal in life was to make sure people didn't know that I couldn't see. So for years, I did that, and you know, you probably find yourself, like, up until a point you can do that. But then when it becomes obvious, you're better off to be honest. So I wouldn't sort of, it's a difficult one, because you, at the same time, there is that discrimination, you know, out there, that, you know, people treat you differently when they know you have a disability. But again, I feel like if you're confident with it, then you'll get through it. You need to make a call. Yeah. If you don't need to, you know, be upfront about it, then don't. I wouldn't say I've got, you know, in terms of what you mentioned, I wouldn't be saying that I've got a lazy eye. I'd be upfront that, you know, I have low vision. But again, just be careful in that space, because, I think that it's hard enough to get a job or get some work. So I don't really have an answer to that, because I've done both. The key for me is that if people, it was sort of the same for me. I started using a cane, not for me, but because I didn't want people to think I was a jerk. Because I'd be doing some weird stuff and I was sure people were looking at me going, what the hell is this guy up to? And so I started using a cane to communicate that, hey, I've got an issue. And then after that, it was great, because, you know, I could walk anywhere and do whatever I wanted and people apologized to me. So I thought that was pretty cool. But I was always very careful about that, especially in sort of a competitive industry. But I think the best thing you can do is be upfront, but be super confident with it. Not trying to give excuses or anything or justifying it, but just reassure and be very comfortable with it. And, you know, because that's just you. This is me, and this is what I have.
What about applying for jobs? I mean, does it make sense to tick that little disability box? Or are we shooting ourselves in the foot when it's such a competitive market?
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just Sarah here. I was just going to jump in, and this is a question that comes up time and time again on the webinars, a big question around disclosure. And look, I mean, what I guess I'd say with my experience is that none of us are going to apply for jobs that we don't think we're competent to do. So to Anthony's point, if you're confident, if you've got the relevant experience, then really your disability or your vision or lack thereof is just part of your wider tapestry. It's not your everything. You're not going to tell them how old you are, how tall you are, how much you weigh, any of that kind of stuff. So if you really, if you're applying for this job because you think that you are a great candidate for it, then you know, unless there's something you can't do, like drive a car or whatever, and you're applying for an Uber driver job, it's kind of a little bit irrelevant. And even a question like that, you know, can you drive? That's irrelevant as well. It should be, you know, unless it's a fundamental part of your role. And I've known people that have actually ticked that box and said yes, because sometimes they can't actually get back over to the next part of the application. But again, if it's not fundamental to the job you're applying for, then it should make no difference. It is a very, very much personal, but to Anthony's point, it's a really competitive market there. You do not want any person or any AI to be discounting you because you might have put low vision or visually impaired or disability in your application or your CV or your cover letter. And I think there's a point when you get to your interview process or whatever, and there is a point where I think it's important to disclose, but you want to first of all get them to see who you are, as a person, as a potential employee. You want to win them over, you know, with your charm and your repertoire and whatever. And then, you know, it's about, well, yes, so I've got some low vision. However, you know, I've got all the technology that I need to do the job. You know, I've done it before, or I've studied, or there's no extra cost because, and it, so, you know, you just go in there with all the answers. Is that helpful?
Thank you, sir. No, that's exactly what I'm doing. It's just, right. Yeah, it's a part of us.
It's a part of us. And I think also, look, it's not just our community who are struggling at the moment. That, you know, we don't want to even look at the unemployment stats. But that's why I think Anthony's point around, okay, have I got something that I might be able to offer as an individual? Maybe flipping it on its head, can I actually start my own business of some sort?
And that's where, you know, just coaching, going down that path of, you know, setting up, you know, yourself, you take a lot of those things off the table because you're not going through that, you know, your interview process is actually, you know, you presenting to a potential customer, you know, to sell them something. So that's your interview. You're not going through that formal interview process where you've got all that awkwardness. So you have a lot more control around the environment and the conditions and you know, how you work. But at the same time, you know, there's all the other things that I've talked about. Is it's a harder,
What about marketing? What about marketing yourself because of your disability? I mean, I'm all about vulnerability. I like connecting with people that are empathetic. I'm trying to find leaders and people to work with at my age and stage in my career that, you know, are more human. You know, I've been through the corporate world and, you know, I'm actually looking to connect more with people. So my disability, in a way, makes me more vulnerable. In some sense, I actually do want to disclose it up front because that will show me what kind of a person the employer or the client is. Maybe I'm being idealistic, but, you know, maybe that's another way to look at it as well.
Yeah, it may well be that you just use your judgment call as to what's going to work best in that environment. So if that's, you know, how going to help you sell yourself and that's how you think it's going to work, then go for it. If you don't trust that that's the case, I'd be, you know, tucking that away for another time.
Yeah, and it depends on the type of job, your role you're applying for. So, for example, if you're applying for a role at Blind Low Vision, then it would be really significant that you were disclosed because you've got that, as you said, that empathy, that understanding, that lived experience. But, you know, for somewhere else, it may not be to your best benefit. But yeah, it's really, it's, you know, you've got to, as Anthony said, use that judgment call. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good. At least I made jokes about Americans and not Canadians, so that was all good.
And Anthony, I was going to just laugh about you talking about deciding to get a cane. I was really similar in that, and I think for most of us who have lived our life with some sort of vision loss, we spend a lot of our time masking, as do lots of other people, you know, and pretending that we can see better than we can. And I had a flight, I think it was an Auckland to Wellington flight a few years back, and it was quite an early domestic flight, and they very kindly had some sandwich board over at the airport, and I kind of stumbled into it and almost fell over, and I thought to myself, I need to get a cane now because this is ridiculous, and they probably think that, you know, I've come from the pub to the airport or something. You know, like you as well, Anthony, I decided that actually it was more about I need to get over myself. And also, you know, people are really generally pretty generous when they can see you've got a cane. It identifies as to why you're a little bit slow, or you're a little bit trepidatious when you get to stairs or whatever, or there's some roadworks that you didn't expect were there. And so I've actually, you know, I wish if I had advice for myself, I had done that many years earlier. Yeah, so I think again, a bit like that disclosure, there is no hard and fast rule. Everybody is different. And we will all do what we do at our own, at our own point in time.
Absolutely.
What's your question about retraining? When you decided to do your counselling, so did you go back to uni?
No, I did. It was through it was an organisation called BTI. So I don't think I want to, because the full counselling course is a full degree, and I don't think I had that in me.
Yeah,
and it's that I was always more interested in the energy work kind of thing. That's Reiki, or from a Māori perspective, it's Miri Miri or Romi Romi. So I'd always done that, but invariably when I was in that situation, it ended up in a sort of a, you know, what's the cause? And, you know, rather than just treating the symptoms, it's the cause. And then that starts getting into that talk therapy space. And I felt that I was really underdone. So just sort of starting to get some skills in that, in that area really, really helped. So you, by combining the two together, you can sort of, offer a more rounded, I can be, better, more supportive and be more effective in that space.
Great. And so, because, that is actually quite a, I speak to quite a few clients who are thinking around the kind of counselling, space type of thing, or, connecting with, particularly in the disability space. So that was, what was BTI, and what was the qualification you got?
Oh, they're just different certificates and So I've done a bunch of the initial stuff, and it's like a building block. The certificates add into a diploma, and then you can actually work towards your full degree if you wish.
Right. Right. Have we got any questions? Any other questions?
I can finish off a couple more things. I just had a few, other things that almost done. So, I thought best to, spend just a little bit of time about technology. Given I ran a tech company, but, I don't want to, tell everyone how to suck eggs. But at the same time, I can't emphasize the importance of technology. It's the leveler. It's the thing that's going to do a lot of things that you can't do, and you need to be across that really well, regardless of if you're looking for a job, if you're running a business, however you're doing it. In terms of when I talk about a leveler, Zoom, look at today, we're not sort of tapping with your cane, walking into an environment you're unfamiliar with, and being out of your comfort zone, and so Zoom, just allows you to present different, confidently in a familiar environment, even if you can't see the people that are on the screen. The AI as well, it's a buzzword, but it's gone a lot further than that. Say, for example, in my business, the software engineers are using AI to cut the code now. So it's about them telling the AI tool, what they want, and if you're precise enough, then it will give you exactly what you need. It's writing the test plans, it's writing the documentation, even release notes and all that sort of thing. So it's actually a lot more real. A lot of people just using it as an advanced, Googling tool. It's writing, pretty decent copy. It's creating images. It's doing all those things. You need to embrace it. You need to not just be a user of it, though. If you, as a point of difference, if you can get in there and learn it really well, even if you're paying for a full version rather than a free version just to learn it, it's gonna see you right in terms of if you can stand out from others by controlling it, engineering it, and actually rather than just being a user, but being more that sort of that engineer of how you're going to use it and how other people are going to use it. I think that's a huge thing, and I think you'll do really well out of that. But again, it's just about getting in there and using it, seeing what it can do for you. But it's such a big, it bridges that gap, and it is going to cover a lot of the things that we just can't do. Lastly, I guess I wanted to talk about my philosophy or how I see things. Now, this has got nothing to do with, setting up a business, nothing to do with finding a job. You know, it's basically just, you know, getting through life. And, you know, for some people, it's a day at a time. I'm sure everyone's different, but I just wanted to share how I do it or how I think. So firstly, you know, not being able to see, it's a shit, right? It's crap, and I didn't sign up for it, neither did all the people around me, but, you know, it's there. It's frustrating, it's hard, everything is hard. Things take so long, even if it's just finding the mouse cursor on the screen. You know, I hate it. It's awful. It's also, you know, can be lonely. Because, you know, there's lots of support around, there's lots of, you know, you have friends, you have your family, but at the end of the day, it's just you. You're the one dealing with it at the end of the day. It's not, and, you know, again, I'm painting, you know, not such a great picture, but, you know, that's how I see it. But to that, what I say is, so what? So what if it's hard? So what if things take longer? You know, no one cares. No one cares about that. That's just what it is for you or for me. So when you bring all of that in and you think about all of that stuff, that's just how it is. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't cry, don't, you know, have a cry, you know, go get angry, hit something, grieve, do whatever you need to do to vent, you know, if that's each day or, you know, or whenever you need it, go for it. But once you're done with that, once you've got it out, then you need to get on with it, because none of that stuff is going to help you. It doesn't help you, you know, get where you need to go. They're just the challenges that you have. So all I'm saying is just get on with it anyway. So if you can achieve what you want to set out to do despite the cards that you've been dealt, you're going to end up a pretty strong and a pretty amazing person. As I said, you have two choices. You can curl up in a ball and you can run with all those excuses that you have, and you can see how far that gets you. Or you can pick yourself up, you can put a smile on your face, and you can work harder than everyone else and get there anyway. And I know, you know, I've obviously made the choice to do that despite, you know, it being hard. There's two things that are really important, as I said. Having some friends that my supporters, they're the ones that are always telling me that I'm doing a good job or not. You know, pushing me along, challenging me, but also telling me that they're proud of me. And that's such a big thing. It's right up there with that inner voice. So that was the second thing. So for me, having that strong inner voice that is telling yourself to keep going, motivating yourself, telling yourself you're doing well, and giving yourself a pep talk, you know, when you need it. Because at the end of the day, it's your inner strength, and it's a stubbornness, and it's your determination, and it's your fight. And maybe it's just to prove everyone else wrong, but whatever your motivation is, it's your inner voice or that strength that's going to get you through in the end. And I just wanted to finish up just by saying, like, my suggestion, or how I see it, is you need to forget about your eye condition. It's there, and you need to get on with things anyway. But be defined by who you are and what you've achieved rather than your disability. I think that for me is a real big thing, because you just got to get on with it anyway.
That's awesome, Anthony. Thank you so much. And just to add to that, I think the other thing that often our clients forget is that despite the challenges and the difficulties and the really bad days and the frustrations, with that also comes an inherent resilience. Don't underestimate that. And also, we're problem solvers, because every day, multiple times a day, we have to, you know, come up with a solution because, you know, something's happened or something's not quite where it is or whatever. So these are skills that employers and businesses are looking for, you know, resilience, problem solving, innovative thinking, all that kind of stuff. So you will have this inherently because you've just had to develop those muscles because of often the challenges that are presented. So, Anthony, that was amazing. Have we got any questions? Have you finished?
Yeah, that's plenty.
Oh, no, that was awesome. Have we got any questions? The Blends class here? We're getting a whole lot of feedback. Has anyone got any questions? That's a great, I think this has been a great session for you, right?
Yes.
Oh, great. So no questions from anybody? Doesn't look like it. So what we're going to do is we're going to put the recording in the next day or so up onto our website. So if you want to go back and listen to anything. Also, we're about to launch our Careers Network, which is an online database of clients, blind, low vision clients doing all sorts of different jobs out in the community, and Anthony's bio is on there as well. It should be up by the middle, by the end of May. And so I think the purpose of this is so that our clients can just do whatever they want to do, see what other people are doing. You know, again, don't be limited by what you can't do, it's what you can do. There's only a few things that, you know, as I said, driving and, you know, airplanes and things like that. But generally, it's about finding that passion. Once you've got that passion and you identify what you want to do, it's actually easy to work from there. So find out your why and what that is, and then it's actually quite simple to move forward. And BLVNZ is always here to support with whatever services you might need in order to help achieve that goal. Anthony, thank you so much for your time today. It's been absolutely fantastic. I've learned so much. I think John has. Have you, John?
I sure have.
John has learned a lot. And so, look, everybody, we will be back here on Tuesday, the 9th of June. And next month we've got support funds, so that's normally a very interesting session. But everybody, I'll let you get on with the rest of your day. And thank you again.